Steve A. Spangin and Donick, 102.5, 106.
That sounds like an episode of Saved by the Bell.
It really does. Yeah.
Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And presented by Bet365, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Noted Mets fan Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, as well as noted Mets fan joining us on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation, Titans reporter. Teron, how was your weekend in New York?
Hey, man, it was great. And let me tell you something. My older brother, he would always say music is like a time machine. And so what you did just now, David James, and I thank you for it, by playing that song, you took me back to when I was 10 years old. In Jamaica, Queens, watching my Mets. I got the video for the 1986 championship, and that was one of the songs on the VHS video commemorating their championship.
That's right.
Awesome.
If the I remember correctly, Teron, they did that video in the season, right? It was almost like the Super Bowl shuffle. Yeah. With the Bears, because remember the Bears got heat. Like, you just did the Super Bowl shuffle. It's the middle of the season. We don't even know if you're going to make the Super Bowl. And as we know, they had no problem with any overconfidence. They just smashed everybody. The Mets were.
You know when they did it, it was after Rusty Staub Day, and they all had the orange. It's crazy. The recall is crazy, but they all had the orange wigs on. And I remember Darryl Strawberry running out with it on, and Doc Gooden and Tim Tuffle, Howard Johnson. Hey, listen, man. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Soaking up the vibe.
Go ahead. Reminisce on the Mets.
They beat the Yankees 2 out of 3, so we're feeling pretty good. It's a lot better than that 3-14 slide we just came off of.
Yeah, and you know, PK, Paul Kaharsky, you know, he had a little bit of that haterade in him in regards to Juan Soto. But it's like NBA Jams. You know what happened? You hit a couple shots in NBA Jams. What'd they say?
He's on fire!
He's heating up. Yeah. Soto's heating up.
Were you at every game this weekend, Teron, or just one or two?
So here's the deal. I went to the Brewers game on July 1st, and then I spent the night in New York, and then drove back to Philly. I had to see my pops, you know, and see my brothers, and then I drove back on July 4th, went to the Yankees game and celebrated my birthday in the 5th, on the 5th, you know, at Coney Island and Rucker Park, and just, you know, back in Jackson Heights. So it was great.
So you were there for the Jeff McNeil home run.
Yes, and the stadium went crazy.
Well,
now, mind you, Soto hit one that day, too.
Yeah. The Mets had a play, and it was not Dickie Lovelady who
not
did
Dickie
pitch.
Dickie Lovelady,
he did
okay.
pitch in the series, and did okay. The Mets right now are trying to piece together several injuries, and so the Dickie Loveladies are coming out of nowhere. They had a guy in his major league debut pitching that day that Teron was there. In the first two batters that he faced in his big league career, bombs.
Bomb.
Welcome to the big leagues. He actually hung in there after that, but two tattooed home runs to start the game.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, Teron, we were just talking about the first of many lists that Jeremy Fowler is publishing at ESPN.com. Mm. He does this every year. He surveys league executives, coaches, and scouts, ranks the top 10 players at multiple positions. Today was the running back list. And I'll be honest with you, Teron, I was surprised that Tony Pollard didn't even fall into the also receiving votes column. He was not in the top 10. He was not an honorable mention. He was also not even in the also receiving votes section. So I was shocked that Tony Pollard was not even mentioned by anybody. Were you surprised by that?
No, it doesn't surprise me. And I think if you look, Tony Pollard, don't get it twisted. He's a solid back. But, I mean, he's not a top 10. He's arguably a top 15. So I think it's just it's well placed. And, I mean, yeah, he got 1,000 yards. But, I mean, it took 16 games to do so, right? Because, you know, he missed one. So, I mean, you got to give and take. He's a good back, but I don't know about top 10.
So, speaking of Tony Pollard, you wrote a story recently for ESPN.com talking about how the Titans hope for a balanced rushing attack with Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears. How much faith do you have in Tajay Spears to be able to help in that regard, considering the multitude of injuries that he dealt with last season?
Well, I know the injuries, you know, are a big thing, especially the concussion. And mind you, he even got a concussion with the guardian cap on. It's just a matter of just playing it safe. Like, if he can make it, I think it's good. I would say that there's, if I had to put a percentage, you know, I would say 70% chance he plays 15 to 17 games. But it just, he tends to get hit hard. He's a guy that doesn't go down on first contact, so he's always going to be susceptible to a second hit. But if they could get him in there, like, he's a very explosive player. Like, don't forget, he scored 4 touchdowns in the last 3 games, and I think that's remarkable. And it's something that, you know, could really spring him towards, you know, a good year this year. But he has to stay on the field.
Now, TD, we had a discussion earlier about, you know, the defense and how the defense needs to step up this year, because it, you know, ultimately that can be a contributing factor to how well, you know, Cam Ward you know, ultimately does, and how you know, how slowly or how fast they have to bring him along. But you brought up Cody Barton last week when we talked with you, and how you were impressed with just the communication skills out there. Is it going to be up to a guy like a Cody Barton, that he may not be the best player, but he ends up being one of the most important players to that defense because of his ability to communicate with everybody?
Yeah, I think that's important. And you mentioned he may not be the best player, but you got to find other ways to have an impact. And I think if you look at this team, like, they may not be the most equipped with breakout game-changing players. So knowing that, they have to find ways to discover that hidden yardage. And that's something that Mike Vrabel was so good at doing, right? Whether it was, you know, taking a couple penalties in order to run time off the clock, or just, you know, some of the different wizard-like things that he would do. I think that's what Brian Callahan and this defense, they have to figure out ways to find the hidden yardage. And when you have a guy like Cody Barton, who may not be the fastest, but is very thorough in film study, is able to diagnose and read quickly, now that kind of helps out. And then be able to relay what he sees to others and give the guys who are faster, whether it's James Williams or Cedric Gray or, you know, any of those guys, to be able to go and make a play. Like, that's the key thing that they have to do, because they don't have many premier players.
Yeah, you're right about that. Willie and I were just off air. We were talking about, you know, the Titans. And if you look at it, if we're talking top 10 players, Adam went over the list with the running backs, and there are more that are coming out, especially right around this time of year, ranking players. But if you look at it and you go down position by position, even if you group the offensive linemen all together and the defensive linemen all together, the Titans still, they don't have a top 10, 12 player outside of, you know, maybe just Jeffrey Simmons. And I think Tavondre Sweat is close. But I think he'll be a guy that's a, you know, when you're ranking these defensive tackles or nose tackles, he'll be an honorable mention type of guy.
Yeah, and you know what? Here's the thing with Tavondre Sweat. I think people are going to be hesitant to mention him because of how much they were against him with the conditioning and all that foolishness. I don't want to admit their mistake. So he's going to fall victim to that over the next couple seasons. Watch.
Now, we had a conversation about DB and wide receiver beefs. The Ringer wrote a long, lengthy article, and it was a good article about wide receiver beefs. And we all know, you know, when that comes up, Steve Smith, sometimes his name is at the forefront of a lot of people's mind, whether it be him and Talib or him and somebody else, Josh Norman, anybody else. But when you think of wide receiver beefs, who are the first people that you think of, you know, wide receiver or DBs you think of?
Yeah, I think you have to mention, like you said, Steve Smith, man. That dude is a cannon. And you and he, you got something in common. You guys are both legends who went to Baltimore and became legends within the Ravens. I think of that. I think I can't help but think of Crabtree. You know, Crabtree and the key to leave. And Richard Sherman, you know, he said, "Don't come at me with no sorry, Crabtree." I took that personally because Crabtree was one of my favorite receivers in college. But Those are ones I'm trying to think. You know, you got to go back to Andre Rison and Deion Sanders. Mm-hmm. I think Jerry Rice and Deion Sanders. I mean, there's a good amount of them. Look, Randy Moss and Darrell Revis, man. Like, Revis was the only one that could shut Randy Moss down, you know. And then you look at Chad Johnson and all the DBs he sent Pepto-Bismol to. Like, there's so many. Like, thinking about it, there's so many that came back to me that I think of, you know. So it's been dope to see.
We're talking to Teron Davenport. Teron, I got two for you. One, just in light of our discussion about Pollard and where he is, he's got another year on him. We know he's such a pro. You can count on that. But now he's got another year under his belt. He's closer. You know, we know how running backs can age. It was so much more in the focus last year, Pollard and Spears trying to replace the legend in Henry. And I'm wondering what you're seeing, because it's not as much of a headline now, but I'm sure we'll focus on it more once we see everybody on the field. But year two of the theoretical tandem of Pollard and Spears, what do you think that could look like? How much better could that look in the second year?
Well, I think it could be pretty explosive, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them both on the field at the same time, right, in the same backfield, and your motion Pollard or Spears, you know, outside and let him do work against the linebackers. I wouldn't be surprised to see that. I'm not saying that we've seen it already, so I don't want people to think like I'm revealing the playbook, but it could be very effective. And just having that change of pace and being able to keep the fresh legs, you know, even towards the end of the game, you know, not everybody's like Derrick Henry, where they get better as the game goes on, you know. I think having that tandem could be really good. It reminds me a lot, honestly. You go back and you look at some of the older Eagles teams, right, with Charlie Garner and Karell Buchholter. And at one point they had a three-headed monster, right, because you put Deuce Staley in there. And maybe, you know, Khalil Mullins could be that guy, or Julius Chestnut. So they have a power option to that slash and dash that they have too.
What do you think? It's such a huge year for Spears, right? And we've seen flickers, flashes of something that has you at least curious to see if there's another level, but he hasn't been able to put it all together. Him specifically, what are you seeing as the upside, and are you starting to worry that we're just not going to see the blossoming?
Well, I mean, look, the ability is there. It's just the health. Can he stay healthy? And I think, you know, the concussions are a real thing to speak about and look at it and be concerned about. You know, he's had a couple, so you want to make sure that that's okay. He's a guy, you know, he had some personal things too, as Brian Callahan hinted at. So you just want to make sure everything's in line for him. But I think this could be a productive year. It's going to have to be, because, you know, he's getting close to where it's going to be time to, you know, either stay here or move on.
Yeah. This is the huge year. It's got to happen. You mentioned the hidden yards. We had a discussion a couple weeks ago, but just how bad the team was last year. Like, it wasn't just, hey, they had a bad year. It was the bottom of the bottom with special teams and all these little things, the hidden yards, the margins that can keep you competitive, that can mean the difference in two, three, sometimes more games. If you just raise that whole level, red zone, third down conversions, special teams coverage, efficiency, how much? What could that mean to the team if that alone just became average? Forget about top 10.
Yeah, no, that could mean a lot. And I think a lot of that goes on Brian Callahan and just finding the hidden yards again, or like just the hidden victories. You know, Darren Bates, you know, he and Jalen Collins, they have the Raw Room podcast. And DB had mentioned how there was a time against – it was against the Texans, right? And, you know, the Texans were up by one, and time was dwindling, and the defense was on the field. It was second and one, right? And Mike Vrabel turned to Josh Kalu and told Kalu to go out on the field. Get on the field. And Kalu's like, yo, there's 11 guys. No, go out there. They took the 12 men on the field. It stopped the clock. They got the first down. They ended up stopping them that series. They got the ball back, kicked the field goal, and won. Like, that's an example of how, you know, being brilliant from a coaching perspective can really benefit you and help you find hidden ways to win a ball game. And that's like I said, that's a perfect example. And that's why, you know, you look at Mike Vrabel, I know it was rocky at the end, but like this dude was a really, really strategic and well-prepared coach. And that's what Brian Callahan has to work himself to.
Teron, before we let you go, Robbie and Rex Rode were having an interesting conversation this morning about Femi Oladejo. And
Femi
Oladejo, a second round pick, but as we know, moved to an edge rusher role, a stand-up edge rusher role this past season with UCLA, if I'm not mistaken. So yes. What are reasonable expectations for someone drafted so high but is still sort of learning the ropes of a new position that he's expected to play at the NFL level?
That's a good question. That's something I kind of been pursuing because I'm really curious how they go about bringing him along. You know, you look at that guy, his energy, his get off, everything is so good. And so it's like, okay, well, why not have him situationally and just tell him, hey, look, go get the passer. Rush the passer. We're going to bring in third down, go get the sack. Right. But Denard Wilson, he said, that's not the approach. They're going to throw everything at him. And they're going to see what sticks, and they're going to, you know, highlight whatever it is that sticks. And he told me, he told me that the main thing with him is that having played outside linebacker, middle backer, he's used to having to see everything and know everything that's going on. So his processing is different from maybe your typical outside backer. So I think that would be an advantage. I would say, you know, 5 to 6 sacks is reasonable, but you know how sacks go. I mean, like, guys do it in streaks, and sometimes, you know, everybody gets going and they get hot and they get sacks and things just work. So we'll see, but I say 5 to 6.
Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation Titans reporter, joining us here on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick as he does every Monday. Teron, great stuff as always. I'm glad you had a great weekend. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, no doubt. And don't leave that Mets fan part of it out of it, too. You know,
noted Mets fan.
I'll be in Baltimore,
yes.
For the next 2 games against the Orioles, too.
Teron Davenport. We'll never forget that point, TD. Don't worry.
All right.
I won't let him forget it, TD.
Yeah.
I can't with Willie wearing his Mets hat. Thank you, Teron. We'll talk next week.
You got it.
Yep.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. But coming up next, Willie was out last week, so we haven't had the opportunity to hear what he thinks about all of the major moves the Predators have made over the past week and a half. The drafting of Brady Martin, the acquisition of Nick Hague, the signing of Nick Perbick. So I thought we'd give Willie an opportunity to give his analysis on all of the moves the Predators have made over the past few weeks. We'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you. Willie Donick was out last week, so you've heard me bloviating about what the Predators did, drafting Brady Martin, trading for Nick Hague, signing Nick Perbix. And by the way, we can confirm that Nick Perbix will join our program tomorrow at roughly 11:20, 11:25. So in the first hour, new Predators defenseman Nick Perbix will join our program. Looking forward to that conversation. But you've heard me spouting off about all of these moves. Willie hasn't had an opportunity to provide his expert analysis of what the Predators have done over the past week and a half. So I wanted to give Willie Donick that opportunity. So, Willie, you take it wherever you want to go. You can do it in chronological order. You can start with the draft. You can start with the trade. You can start with the signing. The floor is yours, my friend.
I think the number one thing I'm seeing as I look at their cap wages contract situation right now is that regardless of what you think about each individual move, they've set themselves up to have some very good flexibility that if things get on a good wave like they did 2 years ago and everything comes together, which happens to some teams, they could have a nice year and maybe bounce back. I would say that is very plausible that could happen with all the things that we talked about. The second year of the big splash of free agency going better than the first year. A resurgent year from Roman Josi. Better team defense, which is a big thing. All of those are maybes, But what they've done is they've set themselves up so that if it doesn't go well, which is probably more likely than it does go well, as I've said, Andrew Burnett from day one is going to be on the hot seat. I would say very few, if any, prognosticators will have them in the playoffs. Do you agree?
Yes.
But they have put themselves in position to where they can trade and continue to build more assets and keep themselves flexible with A, cap space. They will have a ton of it after this year. And the large pool of prospects will be another year closer to really meaningfully be able to help. I think if you looked at who was available on the trade market and also in the free agent market, you saw a lot of deals get done, correct, Adam, for teams keeping their guys?
Yes.
So the number of free agents you thought might be out there wasn't great to start with, and then it was even more unimpressive the day that free agency hit. It was nothing like the year before, some past years. True?
True.
So I just don't think they were going to have a lot of moves that impress them. The key move, I think, is Haig, right? Being able to get a guy who's 26 and 5.5, I'll admit, the moment I saw that contract, I was thinking to myself, is that a little much for what he gives you, which is all defense, all size, and those are very important traits. And he is only 26. He's that mid-20s guy. He is not an offensive defenseman. So you're paying only for defense. I thought that was a little rich, but I'm still recalibrating my brain because the cap is going up. And when you see the market price for guys like Vladislav Gavrikov and the top-end guys like Dobson that we talked about a lot, and now Evan Bouchard getting over $10 million for the top-end guys, 5.5 doesn't – it's not as bad for a guy that I don't think is on the downside of his career. They're betting that he's on the upside of his career, and he's got a unique skill set that you can't find very well, very easily, the size and the toughness. Ideally, if he was a righty, it'd be better, but it does look like he could maybe play either side, just because when you're not offensive, what does it really matter?
not much.
Well, who cares what side you're on? You're not going to score. You know, he's got a specific skill set. So we'll see how that works. And congratulations to you, Adam, on predicting that Nick Perbix would be a fit. And I'm curious, how it ends up shaking out. But I think the whole thing that they are trying to do is give themselves a chance to defend better than they did last year. If you can't defend, you get lit up in this league, and they did not defend well last year.
I put together my projected lineup for next season, and I had Nick Haig playing on the left side of the top pair with Roman Josi playing the right side, and Nick Perbix playing with Brady Shea. Well, actually, that wouldn't work. Well, Perbix is right-handed. Never mind. So Shea left on the left side, Perbix on the right side of the second pair, because the Predators aren't paying Nick Haig to be a third-pairing defenseman. And as I said to Derek last week, and we had some texters mention this as well, Nick Haig was playing on a deep defense in Vegas with Alex Pietrangelo and Shea Theodore and Noah Hanifin. So I likened it almost to Seth Jones when Seth Jones first arrived in Nashville. He was a third-pairing defenseman because he was playing behind Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis on the right side of the defense. So there wasn't really room for growth. So the Predators are betting on, with more opportunity, Nick Haig can be a defenseman worth $5.5 million per season. I'm skeptical of that, but if they're paying him that much, I think they're going to put him at the top of the depth chart. So the way that I made it fit was I had Haig on the left, moved Josi to the right, had Shea on the left of the second pair, Perbix on the right to make my top four defense. And clearly one thing that they're doing is they're getting bigger. Haig, of course, 6'6", 245 pounds. Nick Perbix, not 245 pounds, about 200-ish pounds, but 6'4". So they are absolutely getting bigger on the defensive end. I would love to ask you what you thought about the acquisition cost for Nick Haig. Colton Sissons with 50% of his salary retained for one more year, and Jeremy Lauzon. The Predators also get a conditional third-round pick out of the deal for retaining some salary. So what did you think of the acquisition cost for Nick Haig?
I think I was a little surprised, but it does make me wonder what the health situation for Lauzon is. He had such a serious injury last year. I don't know if Vegas is taking him in a he could be a cheaper version of Haig, who they were going to lose, because there was a lot of interest in Haig. He was going to get, I think if the Predators didn't pay him 5.5, somebody else was definitely going to pay him in that neighborhood, if not more. Because you got to remember, 5.5 is only 5.8% of the cap. So that's more like $3.5-4 million just a couple of years ago when the cap was flat. So everybody's getting paid more, as you would expect, with such a slow trickle of guys that were going to get new contracts. But I'm curious to see what Lauzon gives Vegas, number one, because I'm a Lauzon fan, but the health is a big thing. And he was not as effective last year, even before he got hurt, as he was the year before, where he set the hit record and he was playing second pair of minutes. And then Sissons, of course, his value is not in the sexiness, the goals, assists. His versatility is important, and Nashville will miss that, especially because they're already thin at center to begin with. So that tells you that Halla is going to probably be even more important with Sisson's not there. So that being said, Haig needs to be good. I think the biggest thing I have is with the size that they're adding, how does that fit? What does that tell you about how Andrew Burnett is going to play with these guys? And you also bring in the assistant coach in Luke Richardson, a big, strong defenseman who can relate to Perbix and Haig. But it looks to me like they're going to change the way they play. This is not a team that is designed to get up and down, and the speed game, the possession game, the play going forward, we want the puck. What Andrew Burnett built before he ever coached a game, right? It seems like it's evolving, right? It seems like these moves are evolving away from the way Andrew Burnett came in and wanted to play, because that's where it all went wrong last year. Fair to say?
Yes.
It looks like it's telling you they're going to play different with more of a defensive attitude.
I also want to get your thoughts on the drafting of Brady Martin, because the last day you were in studio was the day of the first round of the NHL draft. We spent a lot of time talking about Porter Martone and James Higgins. We also did mention Brady Martin, but in passing. We really did focus on...
The only reason we mentioned him is because there was a
mock draft that had him going to the Predators
that
morning.
The two guys, we had one of them, we had Scott Wheeler on. The other one, Corey Pronman, put him in as the projected pick, which had us going, maybe we need to consider this guy more.
So the pick is Brady Martin, and I would say the instant reaction was mixed, to say the least. My initial reaction was, the Predators made the safe pick. This wasn't a reach drafting Brady Martin because, as you mentioned, if you look at mock drafts from right before the NHL draft, Brady Martin was a top 10 player for sure. This was not an example of the Predators taking a player who was projected to go in the middle of the round and taking him at number 5. But he fits the Predators' mold. And I thought maybe they played it a little safe going with that versus going with the more maybe boom or bust, high ceiling, low floor, Porter Martone, James Higgins pick. But we heard what Barry Trotz said last week. He said he would bet his life on Predators fans loving Brady Martin. So what are your thoughts on the pick of Brady Martin?
It's a risk, I think, for Barry Trotz to say that, just to be that sure about an 18-year-old. But he says that from a place of, I think he knows that was the rap. That was the scouting report, for whatever those are worth. The consensus scouting report was on Martin. Very, very high floor. But does he have the skill and the impact, potentially, to be the fifth pick kind of guy that you really ideally hope for? And there's no way we can know. He's 18. And so only time will tell. I think you just have to trust when you're making these picks that you can't worry about what everybody else thinks. And you've got 4 or 5 years for it to play out. I would say that Barry Trotz did say more than once, I've told our scouts, let's take some big swings. But this was probably not the big swing pick. This was more of the, but they just fell in love with this guy. Is that fair to say?
Yes. Similar to what we heard from the Titans about Cam Ward. Like,
yeah.
We knew that this was the guy early on. And I think some of the criticism of the pick has been unfair to Brady Martin, because Brady Martin does have some offensive skill. He's not just a checker. But we spent so much time talking about Porter Martone, who scored close to 40 goals, I think, in juniors. And we talked a lot about James Hagans and how he at one point was considered the top prospect on the board. He had a so-so, I guess you could say, college season, at least relative to expectations, and he dropped down the board. And I think there were Predators fans that were hoping that the Predators would go against type, take James Hagans, undersized but highly skilled. But because they went with Brady Martin, I think people immediately thought, oh, well, there are the Predators again, going to get that Predators-type player, you know, built on tenacity and not necessarily skill. I think that was unfair to Martin, but I do think the Predators, you know, they've – Barry Trotz stuck his neck out for Brady Martin, and I'm curious to see how they go about deciding his path to the NHL.
Yeah, the problem with the fifth pick is people are going to want to see it quicker from him, and I don't know if he's that type of guy. It may take 2 or 3 years before he's ready to really help them. But when you're the fifth pick, you're going to have a microscope on you that's different than the other two first-round picks, where they did. Well, I think the defenseman to them appeared to be the best defenseman on the board. They jumped up at the time. They had him graded. They jumped up a couple spots to grab him. And then the third guy is a little bit more of the big swing, right? That's the guy, Riker Lee, that they feel like he grew 5 inches like Luke Kornet. Like Luke Kornet was a 6'5" kid,
and he just got paid.
School.
He just got a huge contract.
But he grew 5 inches or 6 inches senior year. All of a sudden, he wasn't being recruited by anybody. Vanderbilt, because his dad played there, they took a shot on him, and he's still making millions in the NBA. Riker Lee, I think they see something like that, where he's got some big strengths, but some weaknesses that are going to have to get better for them to hit. Some guys make it, some guys don't. But there's a different standard for the 25th, 26th pick than there is for the 5th pick. So there's a lot riding on the 5th pick just before you even see the guy play. So it is very, very difficult. But look, there are great stories of guys who aren't supposed to be the most skilled, but that competitive drive, that edge, that work ethic does lead to great things. And there are water bugs who look like they're going to be great, but the size does end up keeping them from being great players at the NHL level. So if you presume to know how all these guys are going to turn out, I would just say, look, we just got to wait. We can't make up our minds now.
615-737-1025. I wanted to get Willie's thoughts on all of those transactions since he didn't have an opportunity to share his analysis last week. But coming up next, speaking of the Predators, I don't think I've actually ever said the phrase touch grass, but some people need to touch grass. After some of the reaction I saw from something with the Predators over the weekend. And we'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.
Nashville Predators just made a huge PR mistake, and I want to know how not one single person on the entire staff caught this. So earlier this week, the Nashville Predators gathered all of their prospects and held a community event where these prospects would go out and just help around the community of Nashville. They were shopping, gardening, cleaning, doing a bunch of volunteer work. And they also visited a bunch of schools and even went to the Children's Hospital, a very, you know, heartwarming thing. Don't get me wrong, the event was great, and it's absolutely something you want to see out of a professional sports team in your community. But they made a simple proofreading mistake, because they called this event Preds in the Community. And listen, I know it's the name of your organization, I know it's for a good cause, but not one single person on the entire staff was like, hey, you know, maybe we should think about naming this something else. Because, I mean, we are going to be dealing with quite a few children. I mean, they could have easily just said Nash in the Community and had the logo here, which is very recognizable, and it would have been the same thing. But maybe this is just a good reminder that you should always have a couple people proofread these ideas before you execute them.
Okay, first things first. It's
who,
not.
Who is this guy
it's
anyway?
Not, it's
who,
some, it's some content creator. I don't know. It's not important.
I've never heard of the guy.
But it's not proofreading because there wasn't an error.
No.
No.
They're known as the Preds.
I honestly didn't know what he was talking about because I was looking for a typo in
apparently,
the shirt.
Apparently, there was, at some point over the weekend, people got up in arms about how the Predators prospects, because last week was development camp. Mm-hmm. And as part of development camp, the prospects, they split up and they do community outreach. You know, my wife works at Vanderbilt Children's Hospital, and when I called her after the show one day, she said, "Oh, the Predators are here. They were the prospects. I was going to call them kids. Well, they're kids to me because they're half my age. The prospects were coming into the hospital, and as we know, the Predators and Vanderbilt Children's Hospital have a long-standing relationship. And for some reason, people online seized on this Preds in the community thing, like." That's a weird thing to call it. Preds in the community. Touch grass, okay? I've never actually said that phrase and meant it. Touch grass, okay? Why are we upset about this? It's not a proofreading mistake, random guy on the internet, because they're known as the Preds to a lot of people. So I don't think anybody at the organization had to go, huh, do you think we should change this to Nash in the community because some rando online is going to get up in arms about this if we say Preds in the community, despite the fact that we have been Preds in the community for almost three decades. Like,
but he's getting what he want, Adam.
I know.
You're talking about it now.
I'm glad.
Nash in the community
can't be. Let's talk about
it.
No, let's talk about it.
Because Nash is
there.
You
know what I would say? You know what I'd say?
But you can't make a shirt like that.
You know what I'd tell him? Keep the T-shirt.
Yeah.
Keep it.
Yeah.
If you can't figure out that a bright gold T-shirt that refers to a hockey team that has been here for 26, 27 years now, that has been calling themselves the Predators, is he calling for a nickname change? If you can't figure out that that does not mean sexual predator, then that's on you, buddy. That's on you. Hey, and by the way, can we think about all the times if you see somebody arrested and he is referred to as a sexual pred?
No.
It says Preds on the T-shirt.
Yes, it says Preds on the T-shirt. Preds in the community.
Preds! Have you ever heard of a sexual predator called a pred?
No.
Referred to as a pred?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to
my knowledge. Heard the hockey team referred to as the Preds?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty clear who's what they're talking about on the shirt. So, uh-uh. Keep the T-shirt. Don't worry about it.
Hey, brother, you done got Willie mad now. You done got Willie a little bit.
I'm glad you guys are with me on this. I didn't want
to
be arguing.
I'm looking at it. It was
so
dumb.
So people have taken one shot of a couple of the prospects wearing the Preds in the Community T-shirt at Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's Hospital. They have face paint on because I'm sure that was part of their community outreach, and they're like, no way Nashville's making these 18-year-olds wear shirts that say Preds in the Community.
It has a Predator logo right there on the chest plate.
Yes.
As well as in big words, Preds, which means the Nashville Predators. But, I mean, again, it's just somebody.
They could have done this last year or the year after or the year
I'm
before
sure they
or the
have.
Year before or the year before
I'm
that.
I'm sure my closet has plenty of gold T-shirts that have that.
I don't mean about the Predators. I mean people upset about this could have done this exercise last year
exactly.
Or the year before that or the year before that and so on and so forth because this is what it's always been. But I don't know why people are seizing on it now.
Because
they're bored.
They're bored,
they
absolutely.
Some yo-yo that's... Yeah. Maybe they should have, like, oh, yeah, you're smarter than everybody.
Oh, Preds, look at it.
You are so amazingly smart. You've been the, they've
no
been here for 20 years.
You just got it figured this out.
You just figured this out. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. I think I even got a T-shirt. Dumb. Yeah, I do got a T-shirt in my closet.
Now, wasn't there a time where someone misspelled the Preds as the Purds? And said, go Purds, and that became a thing.
Now, well, that happens a lot. Yes. A typo on a T-shirt, that's a whole other category. That's funny.
Go Purds.
And
go
sometimes Purds. Sometimes if you flip two letters, it creates a whole different
word. Whole different thing you didn't want to create.
Okay, hold on. Here's a story from September 4th, 2013. Nate Scott in USA Today Sports. Nashville Predators mistakenly call team the Purds.
Now that's funny,
and an email,
right there.
In an email sent out to Nashville Predators season ticket holders, a representative of the team finished the letter with an enthusiastic cry for the team to do well. The only problem, the person also forgot to use spell check. The email ended with, "Go Purds!" See, that's a proofreading error because you misspelled the word Preds.
That's something I can laugh about.
As in Preds in the community is not a proofreading error because it was supposed to be Preds in the community. But people got to be mad online about everything.
He's getting what he wants, Adam. He's getting that anger.
Let's put him alongside the guy who's now.
Ooh, Mike North?
Mike North. He and Mike can hang out. He can be on the podcast.
Oh, you can't draft your way into prime time.
Those guys are on the list, man. They are on the list.
I just thought, I've never actually uttered the phrase touch grass aloud. This is the first time. Go outside when it's not pouring.
No, go outside now.
Well, now it's not pouring anymore.
Does the guy have anything to do with hockey?
No.
Is he a sports guy?
I don't think so. He's a content creator.
He's a content creator.
Content creator.
He can be whatever he wants.
He's a content creator.
He can be a philosopher.
I can't swear to it, but I'm pretty sure it's been Preds in the community for about 25 or 26 years. Mm-hmm. Every year.
That's what I'm saying. So we all like to poke fun, but people getting upset about this.
Don't you get an email? You're on email chain.
Yeah.
And it says Preds in the community. And it shows you this is what they're doing. They're going to this hospital, that hospital. Which
he doesn't
is really,
follow the Predators. He
which
doesn't
is really
the, predators.
The point.
No.
And not the, but you're going to take this and now make a thing.
He doesn't follow the Predators, I don't believe. And this is something he probably ran across or somebody sent to him. Hey, look at this. And then he made.
Yeah.
It's just, come on, dude. Seriously.
Yes. So,
now, Purge is fun.
And thank you
that
for
was,
teaching
that was
me
funny.
The term touch grass because I didn't know that. I'd never heard that.
Yes, before I came on, I said, I'm going to say this. And Willie said, can you tell me what touch grass means?
Right. I had to make sure I figured it out.
We can add that to Skibbity Toilet. Willie, don't go home and tell your kids to touch grass.
They're going to look at you like, Sarah, you must have just learned that word too, Dad. That's what they would say.
Hey, Evie Mahoney, touch grass.
We ain't did nothing. What you talking about? We hadn't been on the computer. What you talking about? We just came from outside, Dad. What you want us to do?
Yes. So I just saw that over the weekend, and I just said, oh, my God. Are we really doing this? It's July 4th weekend.
It's just an example, though, of what happens. People, it's an echo chamber, and people are like, oh, yeah, that's what, and they don't think it through.
One texter with an existential question. Y'all are basically content creators as well, right? Are you not? Well, I mean, we do provide you excellent content 15 hours a week on this program. But
darn right.
But our job is not – when I think content creator, I think of someone who lives on Instagram or TikTok or X.
And look, there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
that's good.
Not at all.
People have made good money out of that.
Can't be called out for something that's just dumb.
Yeah, right? That was just stupid.
Right, like – Logan Paul is a content creator. Like, we all wish we had Logan Paul's bank account, but I don't consider myself a content creator, although we do provide you, again, excellent content. Which we do create. Not just on our show, but across all of our wonderful shows here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. So I'm sorry to all of you who are discovering just now that the Predators, the shorthand for Predators is Preds. And the Preds are in the community because the Predators do a lot of community outreach. So I'm sorry to all of you who are offended. You can go clutch your pearls somewhere else. Go Purds.
You know, I found myself this weekend watching, which I do.
A Hallmark movie?
No. Oh. I do that a lot, too.
Oh, wow. I was excited.
It's not on yet.
It is Christmas in July, isn't it?
Yes, but I haven't watched any. But no, I found myself watching the Indiana Fever and the, who are they playing? The L.A., was it? No, it wasn't L.A. Was it the Sparks?
I don't know.
Plum, who does Plum play for?
You're asking the
LA Sparks, yeah.
LA Sparks this weekend. And I wanted Indiana to lose so bad. Oh, I wanted Indiana to lose so bad.
Because of Sophie Cunningham?
Yes. And when they lost, I was so happy. I was so happy.
You
is
keep
that
Detroit.
Wrong?
You keep Detroit out of your mouth, Sophie Cunningham.
Absolutely. I was just, oh, I smiled when they lost. I smiled.
So now Derek Mason does have beef with somebody.
Yes, I have beef.
Mm-hmm. With Sophie Cunningham.
And the Indiana Sparks, I got beef with them. Because nobody said, hey, listen, you shouldn't say that. We're trying to grow as a league. You shouldn't say that.
But that'll do it for us today. We're going to hold the beef. We'll bring the beef back at 11 a.m. tomorrow. No Jared today, but you are in the capable hands of Jake Lyman and Connor Newt, who have an average age of roughly 15 and a half. But they will take
16 and a half.
Sorry, 16 and a half.
They're able to drive.
But they will take you from 2 to 6. We'll see you tomorrow at 11 o'clock.
Be love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful Monday. Peace.